Welcome to the Newlyn Rock Leadership Effectiveness Podcast, hosted by me, Kate Thomas. This podcast is packed with practical tips and expert views to unlock the leadership effectiveness in you and your organization. My name is Kate Thomas, and I'm a leadership effectiveness expert and the founder of Newlyn Rock, a consultancy dedicated to focusing on increasing leadership effectiveness for talent-savvy companies and individuals. In this podcast, I will share my experience of supercharging leadership performance and business results with you. Join me and the best thought leaders for topical discussions and talent-centric insights. Ian, we are finally here. We've had a few back and forths in getting this date in the diary, and I am delighted that we now get the chance to have a conversation and bring, I'm going to say, bring your world of well-being to a leadership context. But as I say it, I think it's really important for our audience to know that your background is very much corporate. You know, you have had a very fruitful career in that corporate world, and now wear the hat, fly the flag, have the badge about the importance of well-being. I'd love to know a little bit more. How did this happen?
Great question. And lovely to join you formally in this session, Kate. It's always a pleasure. It's a great question and a great kind of a great journey I've been on, really. As you say, you know, we met back in the corporate days. And if I go kind of way back in my corporate life, and by way back, probably where are we now? 2024. So back maybe 10, 12 years. I was working for a psychometric test provider at the time, and they had a pot of money for training. So it was one of those situations that, you know, manager came up to me and said, "Ian, you know, you've had a great year. We'd like to invest in your training. What do you fancy doing?" And whilst my colleagues were all off doing, let's call them corporate type courses, you know, MBAs and things of that nature, I kind of wanted to scratch my head a little bit and think about what would help me better as an individual. And what I came up with was NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. That was like an interest, really, something that, you know, I'd seen a little bit about and heard a little bit about, and kind of thought, I want to dive into that a little bit more. And I guess that was the most recent genesis of the journey, really, into well-being, because for me that opened up a whole world of basically the manual to the brain. How does the brain work? And that was kind of where it started. So it was, you know, the traditional NLP practitioner followed by NLP master practitioner, and I kind of got so hooked in it and wanted to share more of it with others that I then got sponsored on doing the NLP training course. So I became an official teacher of NLP or trainer of NLP. And the kind of doors that opened for me internally with the organization I was working for at the time was one of people had seen, obviously, a transition in me. You know, learning how my brain works allowed me to be, let's say, more fluid, more agile, a better communicator, more at peace with myself and essentially more at peace with others. And, you know, when you go down this route of changing yourself, it's, you know, it's not unnoticed. People see that. And where it moved to for me was colleagues started going, you know, "Tell me more about this thing that you've been on, blah, 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 blah." And then we'd end up having conversations and we'd kind of skulk off to a quiet room somewhere and fix a few things. And fix a few things quite quickly and quite, you know, quite profoundly. And that then kind of, you know, oh, there's something in this. And it became, let's call it, a side hustle. And, you know, in the spirit of every day is a school day, I kind of then went on, so what else can I learn about? And that's where I dived further into, you know, more things about meditation and breath work and other kind of modalities. So it just, and it just became more things that I could do as far as helping others with their well-being was concerned. So and it was always a side hustle. It was always something I kind of just did because A, I could, I suppose, you know, it was something that I like to share with others, but B, there's a need for it. You know, whilst I was working in the corporate world, helping others be, I suppose, more at peace with themselves and better in their life is, you know, it's got to be a good thing, right? So, yeah.
Wonderful. I love this journey. I've written down so many points that you've just talked about. The manual to the brain, the transition in you, more fluid, more agile, better communication, more at peace. That's that point around every day is a school day. And then you wrapped it up with there's a need for it. There is a need for this. And the way you frame it, I think everyone's going to say, well, 100% there is a need for it. How is there not? Yeah. If we're saying that this way of training the brain, maybe I can frame it that way, gives me the opportunity, and I'm going to add the hat off, gives me an opportunity as a leader and as somebody who's working in a fast corporate world to be more agile in how I come at it. You know, you and I both know the importance of agility in leadership, especially with, you know, our external market being so fluid. The market dynamics are always evolving. Fluidity becomes the key to your success. So I really want to dive in more and know a little bit more about this, what it is that you bring to people. And I suppose in particular, two things. I'd love to learn a bit more around what type of transformations you've seen people experience, in particular when they are using this to be better in a working environment. And this series is talking about high performing teams. And I'm of the mind that, and to your point, more at peace, better communicator. If you think about the dynamics that are in play for high pressurized leadership teams, there's a window here. There's such a great window of opportunity of therefore greater well-being and how you access greater well-being to being more effective in the work that you do and the teams that you're in.
Yeah.
And I'd love to know a little bit more from you around what you have experienced as being, is it tools, anchors?
I guess we've kind of got to start an answer to this by kind of figuring out if people want to be, or if, you know, if part of the goal or the pathway is to be more agile and to be a better communicator and to be more at peace, and to look at what are the barriers to high performance. The journey to a solution has got to start with, well, what's getting in the way? What is it that's stopping that ultimate goal from being achieved? And in my experience, pretty much 95, and because I kind of shy away from saying 100% of the time, because that would then just be, you know, too crass, but pretty much most of the time the thing that gets in the way is yourself. That's it. And so the route to this agility and this route to this peace is not about learning new things. It's not about learning new tools. For me, most of the time when working with an individual, it's about unlearning the stuff that's getting in the way. You can kind of go down the Jungian, Freudian route of kind of going, you know, we've all got our parents to blame for our childhoods. But pretty much who we are as an adult is formed in our childhood. So, you know, the root of how we operate in the world as an adult has absolutely its genesis in the issues that we faced as children. And as we move through into, you know, into corporate world and into leadership roles, we bring a lot of that with us. And for me, the biggest results I've seen when working with individuals is when they are two things, willing and able to look at their past and to dive into what is it that I'm doing now as a result of what was formulated in me as a child. And if you're then willing to do the work on unpacking some of that stuff, you're then able, with awareness, to kind of go, okay, I now know why I'm doing this thing. I can no longer need to do that. It's, you know, it's no longer appropriate. What served me well as a 7-year-old child isn't necessarily serving me well as a, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60-year-old adult. I kind of have this phrase and this saying that we all put stuff in our, you know, items in our pantry with the best intentions. You know, we buy something off the shelf and we put it in the pantry, and it has a sell-by date. It has a use-by date. And the same is true of the things that we surround ourselves with coping mechanisms as a child. They have a use-by date, and unfortunately, most people rarely get rid of those things. Most people rarely tackle them. Most, you know, it's hard work, and for a lot of people, they're not willing to, you know, to do the hard yards. And that the hard yards is, what is it that's getting in the way, and am I comfortable enough to start to tackle that and lose it, because it becomes an identity forming thing. You know, I am who I am because of these things. And when you start to not be that, you know, have that identity anymore, that's then, okay, so if I'm not that, then who am I? And that's, you know, for some people, especially when they do, you know, when they really work at it, for some people, that's the hardest part of the job, is they are no longer who they portray themselves as being, I suppose, is the way, you know, who they, you know, how they carry themselves in the world is no longer the same. And that then becomes this identity crisis thing. But if you can get over that, if you can move past that, that's where the peace comes from. Because being something that you're intrinsically not, that's the hard work. You know, that's the hard work as an adult, is having to keep that stuff up all the time. And when you no longer have to put effort into being that, it's, you know, life is just much easier.
There is tremendous courage, I find, when I'm working with leaders who acknowledge that phrase, what's got me here isn't going to get me there. What's got me here is a sort of a byproduct of my raising, the journey I've been on. And I'm really proud of that. And thank you for that in some cases. And in lots of cases, thank you for where I am now. But if I want to reach a different level, I'm going to say impact, effectiveness, and personally, a better level of peace and comfort and calmness. That point that you mentioned earlier, every day is a school day. I've got to, as you've pointed out, you've got to relearn you.
Yes.
And that, as you say, it is hard. There's a sense of loss. Yes. And you'd have this, a bit, as you brought in identity, you can have a bit of a crisis around, well, I'm so used to being a particular way, and I've got used to feeling how I was feeling. Not always have I made the connection that actually that's getting in my way. And I suppose then when you bring that into a team environment, and I worked with a team recently, and we did some real deep work on self, real deep work. And we'd been working with each other for several months before we went there. And we were, you know, being quite transparent on the lives that we'd had. And it's as if we had that light bulb moment of being able to see the individuals in our team as people. Who have been on a journey, who have had a life, who have had various different experiences. They were no longer head of X with a P&L responsibility of blah and a budget to profit margin of Y. All of a sudden, I'm talking to a person, and you could see facial expressions changing. So it was very powerful. And I suppose when I launched Newland Rock, I was quite determined, actually, to blend this sort of, these are the models of high performing teams, for example, and these are the sort of strategic things that we need to be aware of, and we need to be more enterprise in our thinking, et cetera, all really important parts. But the how we do it and being more immersed from a people and an identity and peeling things back and then rebuilding ourselves, I was very passionate about embedding that into my solutions. Otherwise, I always felt like I was just putting a plaster on. Absolutely. And it would sort of start to peel off after a while. And as you peel off the plaster, it stings. So it's like, this is a lovely conversation for me to have as well with you. And I know that in your work, you're able to go much more holistic and deeper in that space of well-being. You mentioned a moment ago meditation I mindfulness. And I think as well, we've previously talked about breath work. And let me hear more about these different tools. I'm going to call them tools and techniques.
Yeah.
Ways of being, so that we are coming at our life, I don't know, I feel like as if you're coming at our lives with better energy.
Yeah. It's for me, it's always it's this distinction between almost like, what is life? What, you know, how does life exist? And when you pair it back to life, life is just a series of present moments chained after each other. So, you know, we've got this present moment and now that's gone, and we've got this present moment, we've got this next present moment, and so on. So life isn't anything other than just this series of linked present moments. And when you spend most of your life thinking either what's going to happen in X, whatever X is, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, tomorrow, next year, next month, you know, whatever in the future. So if you're spending your life looking to the future, or you spend your life contemplating and reflecting on the past, the thing that you're ignoring is the present moment that you're in. Mm-hmm. And when you ignore the present moment that you're in, technically you're just ignoring life, because life only ever exists in the current present moment. It's like you can never stand in the same river twice. You know, the water will just pass through your legs and carry on down, and you'll never stand in that bit of water again. And the same is true of life, that you will never ever relive a present moment, because, you know, the present moment just moves on to the next one. And what I find is that most humans, most of the time, are not in the present moment. They are at some point in the future thinking about what's coming up next, or they're at some point in the past, you know, thinking about what has already happened. And for some people, they spend more of their life in one of, you know, one direction or the other. So, you know, one of the interesting things when I do work with establishing a meditation practice is kind of, where do you spend most of your thoughts? You know, where are most of your thoughts coming from? Things about the future or things about the past? And whilst we hop and skip between the two, most people have a tendency to live in more than one or the other. And when you kind of say, okay, so if, you know, if you're having a cup of tea and then thinking about, you know, what's going to happen next, you're not enjoying the cup of tea. If you're having a shower in the morning and you're thinking about getting ready for the meeting, you're not enjoying the shower in the morning, and so on and so forth. So life is kind of just passing you by, because as soon as you get to the meeting that you've spent the previous hour thinking about, you're sat in the meeting thinking about, what have I got to do when this meeting's finished? So you're not even enjoying the meeting that you've been contemplating whilst ignoring life. So like, this is true for a lot of people, and, you know, a lot of what I say is not a given for everybody. So, you know, there are going to be some people listening to this that kind of go, you know, that's a load of nonsense, and I'm not like that at all, and that's great. But, you know, this is just experientially what I see a lot of people doing. So this is like a preamble to what mindfulness and meditation allows you to do, is to train your attention so that you can be in the present moment if you choose to do so, or you can be in the future if you choose to do so, rather than just allow your mind to wander at will wherever it wanders to. Because that is true for the vast majority of people. And even though individuals say, yes, but I need to think about the future because of my job, I need to plan, I need to prepare, I need to da 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 da, that's fine if you kind of go, right here, right now, I'm going to spend some time on contemplating this future-based thing. But can you then train your attention so that when you don't want to think about that future-based thing, it doesn't become all-consuming, and you can, you know, enjoy time with your partner, enjoy time with your kids, enjoy time in nature, and so on and so forth? Because for a lot of people, that's not the case. They do walk the dog and have their phone. And, you know, I see people walking their dog and looking at their phone. I see people walking in the countryside and not enjoying the countryside. They're doing something else other than the activity that they're involved with. So for me, meditation and mindfulness is just your thoughts and your activity are aligned in the present moment. It's kind of as simple as that. For the majority of people, they're not able to do that because they haven't been able to train their attention. And the practice of meditation and mindfulness is kind of just working on that skill of being able to say, right here, right now, I am going to focus on the present moment, whatever that kind of looks like. And when your mind drifts and wanders, as it invariably will, notice it and bring it back to the thing that you've chosen to have as your focus, and that's just the skill of and the practice of meditation and mindfulness. It's kind of as simple as that, but it's not simple to execute. It's simple to understand, but not simple to execute. And like all good things, it just requires practice.
The practice, the commitment, the fact that your thoughts will also tell you that in the practice, this isn't the best use of your time. And your sort of inner chit chat will be making you feel restless
yes.
and antsy yeah. to begin with. And it reminds me, and it's not the same, but it does remind me that when I'm working with teams, I purposefully, especially at the first part of things, slow down incredibly.
Yeah,
my tone is slower.
Yeah.
The choice of words are more deliberate. And I can see my group sitting in their chair, possibly close to squirming.
Yeah.
Because it is so unusual. One, they're very rarely given a gift to be able to slow down. And I use the word gift on purpose, because it is a gift to be able to just sit there, slow the mind down, and find peace with being in the present. Because in that moment, what's possible for your thoughts, and then what leads to what it is that you say and how it is that you make people feel and what comes as a result of that conversation. It's about the here and now, and not the, to your point, if I'm falling in on the past, I'm dredging up constantly all the things that didn't work, for example, or I'm constantly referring to, or remember when we did that, that was the best thing. And if I'm constantly talking to the future, I'm blue sky thinking, I'm not necessarily always being real and aware of the challenges that are currently facing me. And I actually love the way you describe it, because if you were to think about a Martian, should that be real? And they're looking down on us, you know, and to your point, you know, not in the shower, enjoying the shower, not sitting there having a cup of tea, enjoying the cup of tea, not walking in the fields, but on the phone. They would be looking at us thinking, how strange.
Yes.
How strange. What is it that you're trying to avoid?
Exactly.
Or what is it that you are not in the now for? What else is going on that is more important than where you are at this point in time?
And so I
love the way that you describe it, and I think that what I am noticing, Ian, and I'd be keen to get your thoughts here, I am hearing and noticing, and in my own coaching practice, there is a far greater appetite to explore what we're talking about now. You know, I remember 10 years ago thinking about meditation in my work and knowing that I was treading on things very gently because I didn't want my clients to think I was woo-woo.
Yes,
right. Whereas we're in a point now where everyone we've gone the opposite. Everyone talks about it, but I would say that not everyone understands exactly what it is that they're trying to do. And they've downloaded an app and they've thought, this is going to help me.
Absolutely.
I don't know. So maybe I've got two questions. I'm wondering what has kind of moved us into this space of being more receptive to what you've been talking about. And in that, it feels as though what happened for us in the pandemic gave us this, we were forced to stop and we were forced to face a significant amount of uncertainty. And all of a sudden, everyone's talking about well-being.
Yeah.
What are you observing?
Yeah, great observation, Kate, because the pandemic, I think, opened up the door to a different world to a lot of people. And that, you know, that included, you know, even things like the acceptability of home working, which, you know, a lot of people find great benefit of. But the other thing is that people got out and walked because it was the only thing they were allowed to do, walking in their neighborhood. You know, they weren't even allowed to go, you know, drive off, if I remember rightly, more than 2 miles or something. So you kind of had to walk in nature locally, because that was literally the only thing you're allowed to do and go outside and do. And for a lot of people, that was the first time they'd ever had the time and space, and I'm going to say permission, to do that. And when the door to that was open and it was embraced by people, suddenly the world was a different place. And I remember the air is generally clean and clear anyway where we live, but I just remember it being clearer and cleaner. You know, there were fewer planes in the sky, there were fewer cars on the road, there was less noise, Nature just took over, you know, but birds and other, you know, other parts of nature were just proliferating, and you could go outside and just quite literally just enjoy nature, just enjoy peace. And then moving back away from that into, let's call it, normal life, whatever that kind of looks like for people after the pandemic, I think there was always this, yeah, but during the pandemic, it was, you know, I want some more of that in my life. And that I think was the spark for a lot of people to kind of go, you know, I want to work more from home, because I do want to go out for a walk at lunchtime, or, you know, have a more leisurely morning, or finish work early without a commute and a drive back and all those kinds of things. So they can partake in life a little bit more. So I think you're right. I think the pandemic was one of those, let's call it, blessings, for the gift that you were talking about earlier of being able to slow down, and for people to realize the benefits that can be accrued as a result of doing that. And whilst most people don't want that all of the time, I think people have appreciated that, you know, if they have at least more of it in their life than they did before the pandemic, then it provides them with a little bit more balance. So yeah, and that then, you know, drives, as you say, that conversation around well-being, which for me is, so I have one of these awkward conversations around mental health, mental well-being, and mental illness, because when anybody talks about mental health and mental well-being, what they always talk about is anxiety, stress, depression, generally. Those are kind of the three hot topics. And they have nothing to do with mental well-being or mental health.
100%.
They're mental illnesses or mental disorders. It's not, you know, mental health and mental well-being is things like hope, resilience, happiness. Those things are mentally healthy. So mental health is not the absence of a mental illness or a mental disorder. Mental health is something extra over and above those things. And so to talk about mental health, you need to be talking about, you know, hope, resilience, you know, happiness, blah, 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 blah. You need to be talking about those topics, not stress, anxiety and depression.
I talk about mental fitness, Ian, and maybe that's with that sort of well-being. And I do talk about fitness because in my world, in the work that I do, it's around working with leaders so that they feel fitter and that they can come at their leadership and not stronger from the sort of beating chest strength, but back to that point, more fluid, more agile, more capable of having broader, bigger conversations. That doesn't mean that they feel the weight of their leadership on their shoulders and they start sinking down and it feels heavy for them. For me, mental fitness and mental health in the mental well-being in the workplace and in leadership is being able to be, you know, inspiring and light and bright and what's possible mindset. And that isn't something that in the constant strain and relentless environments that a lot of leaders are in, plus the fact that, you know, they are the ones when any change is going on, they're the ones that everyone's looking to say, okay, well, how will we do this? What is it that we're going to do? Constant pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, when I kind of come across this, and you're right in saying, you know, a little earlier, what got me to where I am now is not going to take me to where I need to go to. So for some people, it's often worthwhile going back to what is it about what got you to where you are? What were you? And for most people, it's generally avoiding something, or trying to get something that they were lacking at some point in their life, and realizing that will get them to where they got to, but it won't get them any further. And it's, for me, it's about if you can get rid of that thing that's driven you to where you are now and replace that drive with another imperative, another purpose, a purpose that other people can align themselves with, then you don't have to kind of take people with you. You kind of go, this is where we are going for these reasons. And this is what's, you know, what's there when we get there. Come along. Come with me on this. Because if you line your purpose with my purpose, it doesn't feel like work anymore. It feels like a common, you're doing something for a greater common imperative. And when you can define what that greater common imperative is, and it's not about making money, it's not mm-hmm. about selling more product, it's about achieving something more worthwhile than that. And if you can define what that is, such that people can agree to go on that journey with you, they will readily turn up for work because it won't feel like work.
High five. High five to that. Because it really helps to lift leaders' thinking out of the what and maybe a little bit on the how, but into that space of the why.
Absolutely.
And elevating that thinking of the why into something, as you say, that has that collective element that brings a definition as to why we are here. And to your earlier point, helps a community, a group, I'm going to go to team, help a team align with an identity on what is this all about?
Yes.
You know, why is it that I'm actually finding myself frustrated right now? It's possibly because what I'm trying to achieve and where I really feel like this can go in something that has got greater impact rather than the result isn't being discussed here. We're talking about very granular things and not necessarily the bigger piece of what it is that we can actually gain as a result of our leadership. I think when you elevate the conversation and you bring that heightened space of impact that is purposeful and has been designed to be purposeful, that environment that you're creating for yourself and others becomes like a magnet. You want to be part of it. It has the pull factor rather than the push. You know, push is, these are your deadlines. These are the things that you need to do. Come back to me and let me know if you've got a problem, versus I really want to know more. Tell me how else I can serve you and serve, but, you know, be part of this with you. So I think what we're saying is when we're able to gain a stronger sense of well-being, when we have created a greater sense of understanding and helped our brain work more effectively through these techniques, we are by definition creating a better environment for ourselves as a leader and the environment for others.
Yes, because you become more open. You become more open to solutions. You become more open to listening to other people. You become more open to sharing. And a word we've not mentioned yet, I think, is trust. You become more trusting. You become more trusting of yourself, but you equally become more trusting of others. And I think that's one of the biggest barriers to an effective team is trust. I actually saw something quite recently that said, if a manager thinks he's got a work from home issue, he hasn't got a work from home issue, he's got a trust issue. And I think that for me crystallized a lot of managerial stroke leadership relationships with subordinates is the trust. And the trust comes from, are they aligned with my purpose here or not? Because if they are, it doesn't matter where they work. If they are, it doesn't matter how many hours they put in. It's about achieving the objective. And if they're aligned conscientiously to the objective, the how will take care of itself.
How can look different as well,
absolutely,
isn't it? Because we're all aligned and working towards the same thing. My how and my strengths, my ways of going about this aren't necessarily the same as John and Bob and Mary.
Absolutely.
But because we're aligned on where we're going, how we get there brings it to life.
Yes. Definitely, 100%. And for a leader, it's in recognizing that no one size fits all. You know, not everybody's going to have the same how as the leader has. And so when the leader, and this goes back to right at the start when I said about people getting themselves out of the way of the situation, when they can get themselves out of the way of the situation, it's no longer about them, it's about the other person. And so as a managerial style, let's say, you know, oftentimes you come across people who say, oh, my managerial style is X. So, you know, I'm like this as a leader, or I'm like this as a, you know, I'm this type of manager, or this is my style. And I know in a previous life, we've done a lot on leadership styles and, you know, leadership ways of being. And this is where the agility comes in, that if Bob needs you to be a leader like X, be a leader like X for Bob. But if Mary needs you to be a leader like Y, be a leader like Y for Mary. And when you can get yourself out of the way of that, you can be that chameleon in terms of style, so that you can be the right leader for everybody. It's just not the same for everybody. It doesn't look the same for everybody. It doesn't feel the same for everybody. Some people might want their hand holding more often. They might want more communication. Others might just want an instruction and let them get on with it. In being able to recognize that that's what people want, allows you to be a more effective leader in a team, to say, you know, these people deserve to be treated like humans. And they have their strengths and they have their styles. They haven't gone on the same journey, so they're not in the same place. But you, as a leader who has gone on that journey and is a more flexible communicator, you tailor your communication accordingly. You know, there's always the thing about, you know, putting people on a pedestal that have performed well, which is great if that person is more of an extrovert, but absolutely shocking if they're an introvert. That's the last thing they're going to want. But would they perform well knowing that they've got to stand up in front of people and get applauded and all that kind of stuff? No, they're just going to kind of go, I'm going to keep my head below the parapet here and just quietly get on and do what I need to do, because I don't want that recognition and accolade. You know, having certain things for certain types of people is great, but have opportunities for everybody. And that's where the flexibility comes in. And you can only get to that place when you get yourself out of the way.
Yourself out of the way when you take the time to really learn who you are,
exactly
what it is that you've been going through, why it is you do the things that you do, and what are the things that you want to start doing differently. So it's the techniques to be able to really have, and I'll use the word self-command, of the thinking, the brain, and boosting that power.
Absolutely. Because when you can stop your mental chatter, when you're talking to another individual and you can stop your own mental chatter, that allows you to listen. That allows you to listen properly, not listen to respond, not listening to answer, not listening to reply or counter, but just to listen. And when you can just listen, and that's where your attention is, in just listening, you are open to the message that's coming in, rather than filtering it and putting it into something that makes sense for you in your world.
And I've got this visual of the listening and boxing it into something, when actually listen and just allow what you're hearing to absorb and be absorbed.
Yes. With as few filters as you can possibly apply, because, you know, with humans, it's just impossible not to apply any filters. But knowing what your filters are, you can, you know, with awareness, you can then kind of go, okay, I've now interpreted what they've said in this particular way. Is that what they meant, or is that me? To what extent is that me? Or if I took that bit of me out of that thinking that I've just had about what they've said, how else could I have interpreted what they've said? And when you can get to that level of communication, that's kind of where you can really be an effective leader.
And for me, what you're talking through there comes back to one point that you've already mentioned, trust, because you're building trust with the people around you. You're building trust with yourself as well, as you've talked about. The output of that, I don't know if it's the output, but then we're leading with empathy. We are, and empathy for me, and this could be another podcast altogether, empathy and leadership becomes such a powerful tool in the type of organizations that we're creating, in the way that we get discretionary effort from our people, in the way that we create high performing environment without burnout.
Yes.
And that we have well-being for ourselves and others, comes back to that piece of self and others. Why are we here? But I could get quite philosophical on that topic. So I realize that I might take us off tangent. Last question, if I can, Ian.
Of course.
So we're catching up, we're grabbing lunch, and I say, Ian, do you know what? I really do need a little bit more well-being in my life. What's the one thing that you would say to me, Kate, make time for X? What do you go with here?
My go-to is generally spend more time in nature. That's generally a go-to thing, because nature provides you with such an opportunity to have joy at the wonder of life. And, that, and I know that sounds a bit woolly, but nobody ever felt, generally, nobody ever felt bad about going out in nature. So going out in nature is generally a good thing. But for a lot of people, that's not possible. So for those for whom that's not, let's say, an option, the biggest tip for well-being is take as many opportunities during the day as you can to be with the thing that you're doing. So I kind of go back to the kind of the shower, the brushing the teeth, the washing the dishes, the, you know, all of those mundane tasks that take maybe just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes at a time. Be with those things fully. Turn everything else off in terms of your thinking, and just spend time with those 1-stroke, 2-minute activities through your day. And that provides you with just a massive mental clear out, let's say. Your brain starts to, in terms of brain function, the way your brain starts to park things and flush things out and reset and avoid this burnout situation is if you just park that cognitive processing and just be with whatever it is that you're doing as many times during the day as you can, you will just breeze through a day. Absolutely. Just do that, more of that.
So park if you the cognitive processing. I'm going to write it. Yeah. I'm going to put a sticky label on.
Yeah.
And I'm about to cut some sandwiches for my 5-year-old tea party with some of her friends. And I'm going to cut those sandwiches and I'm going to really focus just on cutting my sandwiches, not thinking about the table that I need to decorate or thinking about the bits that need to happen before I can wrap up my day.
Absolutely.
I'm going to stand and cut those sandwiches deliberately.
With your fullest of attention. So if we take that as an example, it's things like you're listening to the knife slicing through the bread, you're feeling it on the bottom of the cutting board, you're noticing the amount of pressure, and what you're not doing is making a valued judgment like, can I cut this faster or slower? I've done this before. This is a rubbish cut. I've now cut this in the wrong direction. This is now wonky. Blah 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 blah. So avoid all of the stuff that we attached to these tasks as humans, which we would generally do, and obviously avoid the thinking about the future or the past, you know, like I wish I'd made more cheese, or I wish I'd made blah blah blah, or I hope
Sophie's going to enjoy this.
Exactly. So avoid all of that thinking around the task, you know, the consequence of the task, and just be with the sound, the smell, the texture, the action, the activity, without judgment. And notice how settled you will feel at the end. First of all, you've got to notice that your brain will want to wander, because your brain will kind of go, you've got more important things to think about than cutting, you know, passing a knife through bread. So your brain will want to go back to its default mode network, which is, I've got to look after you, and in looking after you, you've got to make sure you're prepared for all of these eventualities that might come up as a result of the sandwiches that you're cutting. So when you notice that your brain goes off in that direction, kind of go, thank you, with good grace, I actually just need to focus on the cutting right here, right now. Big smile, carry on focusing on the cutting. And it'll be, you'll find this a wrestle. You'll find that the actual task will be quite demanding to keep bringing your mind back to the task. But that's the practice. That is the practice. And you'll feel so much better afterwards. I'll send you an email.
I will. I'm actually now looking forward to getting to those sandwiches and what it's made me think about, or how it's made me feel, more importantly. I suddenly feel like cutting those sandwiches is going to give me a bit of me time.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what it's about. That is exactly what it's about. And when you sprinkle that through your day, so this is the answer to your question. When you sprinkle that through your day, maybe once an hour or once every 2 hours, that little bit of 1, 2-minute, 3-minute me time sprinkled throughout your day is such a powerful boost, such a powerful reset that then allows you to do all of those other things with absolute clarity, rather than your brain running around at a million miles an hour, because it's, you know, it's giving you the next thing to think about, the next thing to think about, yeah, the next thing to think about. And so for those people who say, I haven't got those 2 or 3 minutes to give, you know, my cognitive process into, because I've got all these other things to do, you actually find you can achieve more in a shorter space of time by being more focused than so there's like a payback for this, like 2 or 3 minutes here will give you a payback later for absolute sure. Absolute sure.
Bring on the sandwiches.
Bring on the sandwiches. Yes. Mindful butties.
Mindful butties. There you go. That might be the name of our podcast.
Yeah,
come
well
and
be.
Listen to myself and Ian Kershaw talk about mindful butties.
Indeed.
Ian, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate.
I think anyone listening to us is going to be listing down some great actionable things that they can do, as well as help them realize that something that has become quite fashionable to talk about, the benefits that it actually has in our life and in our leadership. And basically, if you're not incorporating some of this into your life and leadership, you're missing out on Absolutely. Something that is far more fulfilling than maybe what is currently going on for you.
Yeah, so missing out on life. Nobody wants to do that, right?
Yeah. Ian, thank you. I really appreciate
it.
It's been a joy, and I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
Yes, bring it on. Good luck with the sandwiches.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Newland Rock Leadership Effectiveness Podcast with me, your host, Kate Thomas. If you would like more information on how I can help you or your organization maximize your talent and leadership effectiveness strategies, then reach out to me through my website, newlandrock.com.